Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for staying with us into the second segment here together with Matt Presti and Robert Otey. We are talking about Walter Russell, Leo Russell, and of course the Russellian philosophy and ideas about the universe, where everything comes from, and we're trying to get to some of the answers of what we all want to know. And I was thinking in the break here, guys, if I wanted your comment on this, if there's anything good coming out of the, you know, the quantum mechanics kind of field, and you know, the what the bleep do we know kind of movies and everything else. I mean, these are some of the ideas that Amit Goswami has brought to us, and at least it makes people look in a different direction. They have a little bit more of like that their own consciousness is part of the picture a little bit more, and understandably, although we're not might not be there yet, at least maybe it's a you know, we're heading in the right direction. It's kind of what you said earlier, Matt, that if we keep looking and don't give up on you know, believing that we have all the answers, we might eventually get there. What do you think?
Well, that's certainly, you know, a step toward consciousness is always a better step. regardless, Russell and other illuminates like Tesla, who wrote of Russell's work, that he should, you know, he was one of the few people that actually wrote back and actually read the Universal One. He told Russell he should lock that in a sepulcher for 1,000 years because mankind is not ready for it. And when the greatest electrical engineer in the history of mankind says something like that, that's one of the things that caught my eye when I debated whether or not I should read The Secret of Light. I noticed that quote from Tesla and verified it later in Atomic Suicide. And it's just an amazing thing. I mean, basically what we're talking about is mankind, as Russell said, when he understands the universe in these simplistic terms, this easy to understand process, he will advance 1,000 years in that day. My question is, why should we wait? Yeah. And I know that there's a lot of innocent and you know, very insightful and inquisitive people in all the fields of research, but it doesn't give us a right to ignore, even with that innocence and inquisitiveness, to ignore something so profound as a message which could help us to progress 1,000 years in one day. So I'm going to take Tesla's advice, and I'm thanking Leo for helping him to get this stuff out there, Walter, that is. So I'd like to see more people at least take a look. There's no harm in looking. You know, I've looked at quantum physics. I watched What the Bleep Do We Know. I watched Down the Rabbit Hole. I watched all that stuff multiple times. But how about all those people who have seen that already? Give Walter Russell a chance. Let's see if we can take science 1,000 years into the future. And I think one of the most beautiful aspects of this science is that it truly marries spirituality. Something that science and religion, to me, I feel like you know, science and religion are two divorced parents pulling on each one of my arms, about to tear me in half. And I just want to be loved. So in a sense, you know, it is the most beautiful marriage of science and religion, philosophy. I wouldn't say religion, I'd say philosophy and science, more or less. And you could call it psilosophy if you wish. But
love new words. Great one.
Yeah, we actually have psilosophy.org and .com just in case we want to, you know, offer that up someday. But interestingly enough, you know, I think that knowledge gained through illumination, and Tesla is another example. He said he had a flash walking through the park, and he saw the AC motor completed in his mind, and his task was just to build it. Like Michelangelo could look at the stone, and he said his task was not to chip away the stone, but to carve out that which already lay within it. So it's this mystical, that's what we call mysticism, and it's so mystical because the average man doesn't know how to use anything but his senses. And the great people that come to us, we call them the messengers. They come to us and they give us the process of creation and co-creating, you know, that we would do well to listen. And I think the way Walter proved it is he demonstrated his knowing in action. You know, he was a master sculptor, master painter, master horseman, master wood carver, master geometrician, master scientist, master philosopher. I mean, I could go on and on. He had 11 conferred degrees and dropped out of school in the fourth grade. How do men that don't have an education do this? Well, he acquired his knowledge through the light of mind, and that's something that quantum physics doesn't take into account. So they do take consciousness into account, but I think it's not the kind of consciousness we're seeing Walter talk about, where this consciousness is also your consciousness, in the sense that you can command it to the degree that you understand how it works. And just my own personal understanding of the philosophy, when I began to apply it to my life over the past 3 to 5 years, I've done more in my lifetime than I have in all the other years of my life combined, simply by understanding that my mind is an extension of the one mind of the Creator, the Universal One. All that power is my power to have based on my desire to wield it. And it can't be approached by the profane. You can use this power ignorantly, and it's disastrous in your world, like nuclear power is. We put the cart before the horse developing nuclear power before we realized its dangers. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. So yeah. A step in the right direction, consciousness, I think it could be boosted greatly. And it's like taking a shot of espresso, in other words, to just speed up the process.
Robert, anything to add to that?
Oh, geez. Henrik, I'm so opposed to what the bleep do we know and the secret. It's not even funny. I mean, this information is gathered through channeling. Jay-Z Knight produced this stuff based on Ramtha, 35,000-year-old Lemurian warrior and all this. It's stomach churning is all I can say. There's no such thing as a law of attraction. There's no such thing as attraction or repulsion in the universe. I mean, these are allusions to our senses. Like if we take two magnets, if we take a north pole and a south pole and they go together, it's not because they're attracted, they're seeking voidance. And the reason being that the electrical rings that give them their so-called magnetic properties, which are really electrical, are spinning in the same direction. So they can mate. But if you take two south poles and try to mate them, they won't because they're spinning in opposite directions. And the same with two north poles. So the absurd idea that this all you have to do is think of your fantasy world and you will, by some law of attraction, attract wealth and prosperity and happiness to you, it's absolute insanity. Then you have people like CIA-owned ions, which Edgar Mitchell, who claims to have walked on the surface of the moon, flying in an eighth-inch aluminum can to the moon and walking there somehow magically. This guy is pushing, the secret and what the bleep do we know as the kind of cutting edge of consciousness when it's just based on channeling and New Age mind control. I mean, a lot of this stuff is authored by the CIA. The CIA, to me, owns the New Age movement. A Course in Miracles and all these other many strange, things that are coming out from the New Age movement are actually authored by like people in the CIA and stuff. So I don't trust channeling. I don't trust any of this stuff that's coming out of people that channel information for what you know.
Do you think it's for...
That's all I can say.
Sure, no worries. Do you think it's for the purpose of, laying the foundation for basically a new belief system, a new creation of a religion, basically?
No, I don't. Well, from where Edgar Mitchell and people like that are coming from is like all about this aliens. The aliens are coming to save us, Sheldon Neidl, Galactic Federation of Light. I don't want any freaking aliens to save me. I don't need an alien to save me. I have divine connection to the Creator within the stillness of my own heart. Why would I need some alien to save me? And I think there's an agenda behind all this. I think this alien thing is being run from up top. It's a top down pyramidal mind control racket that's I don't want to have anything to do with it. And I don't have anything to do with channelers at all. I've met many of these people face to face and they're bullshitters. Okay. That's all there is to it. I mean, that George Casavalles guy or whatever his name is, he said we're all going to ascend into the fifth dimension, on the 21st. Didn't happen. You hear this kind of stuff all the time from these channelers. So I'm 100% opposed to channeling. I'm 100% opposed to outside information. I think you should get it from the core of your own heart, Make your own divine connection. We don't need a priest between us and the Creator anymore. We don't need a scientist between us and their atheism or, you know, their agnosticism anymore. We each have access to the divine, you know, and let's each take responsibility for our own lives and mine that information that we have as our own self-knowledge.
Indeed. I don't want to mull on this for too long, but do you think that there could be, I don't know what to call them, lower end entities that are actually getting in there, you know, posing as a higher voice, you know, kind of preventing, I guess, to reach the higher connection.
I think that's what all channeling is. It's totally, 100%. I think that I've got a really good vid on my my playlist on my YouTube channel where these people were involved in channeling for a couple decades. And at the end of it, they realized even the so-called good ones, the ascended masters or whoever they thought they were communicating, they were all just wanking their chains, man. They're all just, you know, using these people and deceiving them, ultimately just playing games with them. And I totally believe that there are, you know, those nefarious entities, that those people are tapping into that source and not, you know, why would you go there when you can go straight to the creator? That's all I'm saying.
So how would you go about quality control here? I mean, I'm not into channeling either, but let's say that someone is doing it. And I mean, how do they know that they've connected with the real thing, if you know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying flee like the, you know, run like the wind, man. Get away from channeling. Don't have anything to do with it. You know, I'm not interested in it at all. I don't listen to channelers. Yeah, and I had an experience with a channeler out in Colorado, and we saw firsthand just how horrific it can be, you know?
Yeah, well, let me ask you, I guess what I was going to get to is a little bit how it differs from what Walter is doing in terms of connecting with the source, if you will.
You want to take that, Matt?
Sure. Walter's inspiration speaks for itself. His work speaks for itself. He demonstrated in action his inspiration, which serves to re-inspire others. Inspiration, in my opinion, is truly the greatest gift a human can give to another, because that is the state of ecstasy that the creator creates the creation in. And that brings me to another point we discussed earlier about discussing the process of how we actually build bodies in like fashion. I mean, if the mystical interpretation of the universe is correct, and God thinks his images of his ideas of mind into form, then man would do the same thing in the likeness of it. And there's nothing in this world that wasn't first an idea in a man's mind. And the idea of a nuclear missile is also an idea, but that doesn't really inspire people, does it? So, but yet a beautiful piece of music can move a man's soul to go out and re-give that inspiration. The question you have to ask is what you're studying, is what you're listening to, is what you're what you're perhaps channeling, is it inspiring you to create a better world? Is it freeing? Is it liberating? Is it cutting out the middlemen between you and the creation, the creator itself? Because in a sense, in Russellian science, he puts the ball of responsibility in the court of the person who reads the work. He says, you are an extension of the creator, you yourself. And so your interpretation of your world, if it's not your own, it's somebody else's. And he just, he saw the world in a very simple way. He shared his philosophy. He lived it. That's why they call it a living philosophy. There are dead philosophies out there. The philosophy of war is, you know, the art of war is a philosophy, but not too many inspired people live that philosophy because it results in death. So if we're like our creator, we create a state of ecstasy around us, a state of creation. We serve to inspire those around us. We don't find ourselves on the victim list left out in the cold. We're actually taking part in co-creating our worlds with intent, with purpose. And even part of the Divine Iliad, just a small section of it, derided those useless beggars by the road who ask alms, seeking not the kingdom of heaven within to share with men. But yet, I think he was deferring to like those people that just want to meditate in the mountains for their entire life. You know, a sense of purposefulness is what the artist and the creative man who is like the creator lives in a like fashion. So we have these inspirations. We have these ideas. That's why the idea is represented by a light bulb going off in the mind, which is your pineal. You see the image of completion, and then your task set forth is to build that image into a body that you can then share and say to others, here is my body of work, here is my art, here is my creation, my writing. And if we live in, and the one thing that Russell said too is that this universe is created from a desire to express love by the creator. And that's where the beauty of Leo's coming into the whole thing stems from. And if that's the case, then the giving of love for the re-giving of love is the whole purpose of creation. And if man follows that law, he creates a world of abundance and prosperity, a brotherhood and sisterhood of mankind. If he breaks that law, we get a world like we have today. And it's really so simple, and it's right in our faces. It's so obvious. You know, these administrations of politicians, these secret cabals and secret societies, they violate the law constantly because they have to in order to survive. If they were to be benevolent, wonderful, giving people, they wouldn't need to be secret, number one. And number two, we would see the effects and the fruits of their labors. But I think they're a little bit afraid and they're terrified of what it means to actually, for people to actually figure out that they're in control. That the person they're trying to control is actually the one in control, because you have to agree to give your power away. And, you know, Black Elk was another one who said, in a sacred way I walk, in a sacred way I talk, meaning that when you approach your universe from that source of sacredness, you know, and he was another one who had that vision of in his writings for John Neihardt, the Black Elk speaks, he said, he looked out across the mountains. He saw the central mountain. He realized the central mountain was everywhere and that he was the central mountain. So the center of stillness within the self is the omnipresent point of the creator God that is not anthropomorphic, and it's sexless. It's omnipresent. And that's a difficult thing to do for people, is to imagine what omnipresence means. So I think when you fully realize that you are an extension of God, in other words, when you walk and talk with God, you're talking with yourself, as Russell said, and you are God in that sense. But those who realize that could not possibly harm another person, because they realize that the other person is them. They'd be harming themselves. And if we all had that realization tomorrow, the wars would cease instantaneously. But that would defeat the purpose of the drama of the entire play of creation on this planet that we find ourselves. So I would just liken it to a saying that Walter had, which was, "All men will come to me in due time, but theirs is the agony of awaiting." And that was from his Divine Iliad. Those were some of the words of inspiration that he wrote down. So,
very interesting, Matt. Yeah. I wanted to ask you also regarding if it is a play of creation, if you believe, or if you want to take this, Robert, that we're, because you said earlier, Robert, alluding to the pre-high civilization, and there seems to be a cyclical, catastrophical nature to our existence, how it's unfolding and all that. If our ability to understand these things and realization and you know, showing affection and kindness to you know, our fellow man, etc., is driven more by a cosmic cycle, that is something that is external to us, Matt or Robert?
Well, sure. Cosmic cycles do have effects on us. I mean, obviously, astrology is a holy science. Astrotheology, very old. A lot of these wars we see start, they know to start these things on certain days of the year at certain times. But as far as our own personal consciousness, I think we do, you know, feel more sexual in the springtime. There's a reason for that. There's reasons for other things, but consciousness alone by itself is, I guess you would say it's almost as if, you know, the ball rests with us. In terms of what do we want to make our world, we're reaching an age in our humanity where we can't blame cycles any longer. I think we have to take responsibility that cycles do have effects, but that we don't have to have the same old reactions to them. We're becoming knowledgeable enough in our awareness of ourselves. Walter said there's all these sciences, but there's no science of man. And that's what the whole founding mission of the University of Science and Philosophy was to give man a science of himself, a science of mind. And he was friends with Alexis Carroll, with Ralph Waldo Emerson, Mark Twain, and they met under the guise of a club called the Twilight Club. And Edwin Markham, who said, "In vain do we build the city if we do not first build the man." So as we've had this past 100 years of absolute greed ruling in man's world, they've used cycles of you know motion to use as a springboard for their own dark agendas. But I think we're beginning to see it backfire on them. I think consciousness is old enough now that it's beginning to realize that it has more than just a passive part in this act, in this play, in this drama. And that's one of the things we're trying to spread, is the power of knowing that you have the power within you, yourself, to make a difference in this world. And that's what Gandhi did. He said, "Be the change you seek." You know, yeah. So it's interesting. I mean, it's going to be a interesting next 10 or 12 years to see where we can actually take this as a human race.
Yeah.
I would like to see it move toward a brotherhood and sisterhood where we can, you know, reap the abundance of love shared, you know, through the hearts of men and put this barbaric system of death, war, drones, and secrecy and illusion away once and for all. I mean, the other option is we can explode our planet, but I would rather see it go in the way of giving love to your fellow man so that love can be regiven. And we do that by being the change. We have to be that love that we seek to see in the world.
Is the force that, what should we call it, you know, dipole, is it that extreme, polarized, I guess that's the right word for it, that the direction is either, you know, A or B, you know, good or bad? Is that the cusp that we're on right now, do you think, Matt?
Well, it can definitely go both ways. I think it comes down to a personal choice, you know, and I don't condemn anybody for choosing out of ignorance something that's comfortable, like keeping your job and not looking at any information that might open you up to a different reality. I mean, basically, the Russell said there is no death. We unfold from birth and refold to it, which is that still white magnetic light. Mind comes from its seed. It lives for a time and then it dies. And we have all eternity to figure out. If not in this lifetime, we'll do it in another lifetime. If we blow this planet up, there'll be billions of other planets in the solar universe that we can reincarnate on. But at some point, you know, man can either choose to move toward the light of his mountaintop, which is the realization of mind is causal and your part in it and your ability to create and co-create, or we can move backwards toward the blackness of our jungle from which we extended from. And basically that's, you know, it comes down to a personal choice. I think from what I'm beginning to see personally is more people taking an active part in their own lives, putting down the savior mentality that someone else is going to figure it out for you, someone else is going to save you from these things, and actually taking a part in building a life worthy of saying you're human. I think it's just an aspiration that people are getting tired of business as usual. They want something different. We're seeing these communities develop around the world. We're seeing a huge push like never before for alternative energies and different modes of thinking. And I think that's good. And it can only lead to things that are good. As long as its seed is good, then the fruit shall be good.
Yeah, free energy is the thing I want to get into a little bit later as well. But we wanted to get into some more things that, confirms Walter Russell's work. Robert, tell us more about Frank Schester and what he's been doing and how he's confirming the work.
Yeah, he's really doing some incredible work by going through laborious, long, it's taken him like 12, 13 years now, through this empirical research to show these unseen space geometries, which are called magnetic space geometries in Russellian science. He's proving them. I mean, he's been able to go through little by little. He started out with like, a chunk of clay and some toothpicks was his first. He was a sculptor. So this guy, he taught sculpture in colleges and stuff and painting and, you know, for his whole life. And then when he retired, he got into developing this idea based on Rudolf Steiner's ideas of a seven-sided form, which inevitably led him to the chestahedron, which is it's like a platonic solid in the fact that it has equal surface areas, but there are two types of surface areas rather than one, which is typical of platonic solids. In a chestahedron, there are triangles and kites, but they all have the same exact surface area. And he was able to show empirically that the heart is twin opposing vortices. It's based on the very same thing that an atom, a galaxy, or a sun is, and that is the male and female sex-divided vortices as they come together and mate with each other. And the heart is not a pump. It's an implosion regulator, and that's pretty easy to prove because even in an embryo, there is no heart, yet the blood is moving through it. The whole point of the blood is to move through implosion through the rifled arteries and veins of the human body. And so implosion is the natural flow. Everything is based on spiraling Phi. Everything is part of this electric universe of twin opposing vortices, the spiraling Phi that basically creates all aspects of reality, whether it's the spiraling of the wind or electricity or of light or of water or of blood or of sap. All these things are spiraling, and that's the natural motion to creation. So Frank has been able to demonstrate empirically with his research the very foundations of Russellian science. What he's doing is he's seeking to show you these geometries, what Russell calls magnetic space geometries, that are basically give form to everything in this creation of the electric universe. The human heart, for instance, is surrounded by this chestahedron. It's a form that he was able to put in an implosion tank with water and reproduce the aortas of the human heart. So he can show you that the heart is definitely not a pump. What it does is it breaks and controls the implosion of blood and then redistributes it through the other vortex, you know, through the body. So, you know, there's so many things about our science that are backwards, and now we have somebody that's coming in and proving empirically that which Russell found, you know, through divine illumination. So what we have with Frank Chester and Walter Russell is a perfect marriage of both divine illumination and the scientific process of empiricism. So he's gained a huge following lately. He's being funded. He just got a laboratory and a research facility given to him in San Carlos, which I'll be going down to this Saturday and filming. He'll be speaking there. And it's the grand opening of his new facility. And he's been given seed money by the medical establishment to study the heart because he's got some insights into the human heart, which, you know, basically is as above, so below, as within, so without. The heart of an atom, the heart of a galaxy, the heart of the sun, the heart of the earth, they're all functioning according to the same exact principle. We have a seamless cosmology from the atom to the galaxy. It's not divided up into little compartments of compartmentalization of consciousness or so-called fields of study as it is done in academicism. What we have is something that's a seamless cosmology that explains how everything in the entire universe operates.
Yeah, it seems that, again, we're back to the division idea. I mean, I've talked about this before, but just we're taught that people who in the past were into, you know, alchemy and things like that, that they were, you know, that they are occultists, so that they were into some kind of evil work. But I mean, these are holistic people, and it's what you, Matt, said with Walter as well, that he was into many different things. He's an artist primarily, and then, you know, you know many different things. It's like a Renaissance man in that sense, really. And
that's a polymath.
Yeah, exactly, and that's what we've walked away from. We're dividing, compartmentalizing, looking at smaller and smaller parts, and now we're into, electromagnetics and just, you know, applying the pill or, you know, the chemical or something like that to try to, you know, change it or affect it. That's occult to me. What we're doing today, that's pharmacologically, that's the occult, you know.
Yeah, well, Susan Eiserbeit has proved that empirically as well with 150 years of chronological dumbing down through the academic system. You know, the deliberate dumbing down of America is irrefutable. You know, it shows you how, like, you know, kids coming out of the eighth grade in central Kansas in the late 1890s and stuff, they knew more. They could pass a test that probably none of us could pass today, you know, because education was so different.
Yeah, it's going backwards. Let's talk about how things are created out of the stillness. I mean, if there is this so above, so below kind of concept, and it doesn't really matter what we talk about. But I mean, if we look from things like stars to planets and down to creatures and the human body, how are those things pulled together and manifested out of stillness, Matt or Robert?
You want to take that, Matt?
Sure, I'll give it a shot. Well,
that difficult question.
That's okay. No worries.
No problem.
We often both talk at the same time sometimes. So, from Russell's writings, you know, planets, stars, galaxies are all born from primaries, just as animals, plants are born from the seed of the mating process of the male and female divided sexes. And what the divided sexes do is come together as one for a brief moment or longer. And in that oneness, that the division is repeated. So there's the process again. The sun is the birther of the planets. This is a fundamental difference between the way the Big Bang purports that gases cooled and happened to form Jupiter and Saturn, just, you know, all happen to be effects of this gaseous cooling. And, you know, but in Russellian science, all planets are born from their primary. And it's interesting to think of it that way. And some bit of evidence that can support that is as a small child, if a child is small when it's born, and up until the time it turns 18, moves out of the house, at least in America, if you're lucky, you move out by 30 these days. But a small child grows from a small seed. It's a small being. And you nurture it and care for it, and you know, it goes on its own way and eventually becomes old. And so be it with the planets. You know, Mercury is very small because it's young. It's still a baby. So it doesn't have any children of its own. Venus being the same. Earth has one child, and she's already begun to ablate, which means she's aging past her condition of prime charge into a state of discharge. And what moons are actually rings that have been ejected from planet cores at the equators. So these motions in the universe are supportable by Russell's theory, Russell's work. And you know, from the star to the galaxy, Robert, if you want to touch on quasars and possibly, you know, birthing of galaxies and things, that would further...
Everything conforms to the same exact method, you know, in nature. I mean, everything's born. It grows to maturity in adulthood. It kind of gets old and decrepit and passes on and is repeated. Everything is a cyclical repetition, you know, throughout nature. And the cosmos is no different. I mean, in astronomy, you know, astronomy is full of so many errors, it's ridiculous. I mean, they think that like a big, big star has a bigger tank of gas, you know, because they think it's burning hydrogen and helium and it's a nuke fusion star. That's all garbage. It has nothing to do with reality. A big star is a mature star. It's an adult star. Everything goes through these, the same exact thing. Mercury goes to the position of Jupiter, it will be almost the size of Jupiter. Because as each planet is birthed, another one is pushed out. This is all due to the electrical pressure gradients within the solar system. And all the other planets will be pushed out, and all the other planets expand. I mean, it's been proved in quite a bit of detail that planetary expansion is what's going on. You know, the tectonics and stuff, that's all kind of a myth, you know. What's happening is the Earth is ripping open, just like, you know, Mars and Jupiter and all the rest of the planets have been expanding as they move further and further away from the sun into different electrical pressure zones. So this, you know, all of nature works according to the same exact principle, whether it's plants or animals or planets or suns or galaxies. All the stars are birthed by the galactic core, you know. And the stars birth planets, and the planets birth moons. I mean, it's a seamless cosmology. Everything obeys the same fundamental processes.
If I might, real quickly, Walter asked the question in A New Concept of the Universe, and this really hit me to get it a little more. He said, if atoms make up the sun, then why would the sun have different properties than an atom?
Yeah.
If it's made of its constituent part, the atom, then why would it act differently than the atom does? And that's just something to consider. So,
Right. They have these boxes, all these boxes. You know, you have the strong and weak, you know, nuclear forces for the nuclear theory of the atom. You have other forces for galactic stuff. And it's all, it's just a mess. I mean, the mathematics, you know, the gravitational pull and all this stuff, creating dark energy, dark matter, all these things are myths based on massive misconceptions of how nature actually functions. Nature doesn't function according to the way academia is reporting it.
It's like a lie that's getting more and more complicated by the day. I've always found the expanding Earth theory interesting, and some people have explained that due to this, we have the effect of gravity. But I wanted to ask you guys what gravity is, if it even exists in this cosmology. Well, Robert?
Gravity is stillness. Gravity is stillness. Gravity is points and shafts of stillness, which the electric rings that give form to spherical and ring systems, like a ring system would be a galaxy, for instance, but a spherical system would be a planet or a sun. Gravity centers all of that. It's the points of still magnetic light. What you have to realize is there's the magnetic universe of stillness, which is omnipresent. It's everywhere, okay? So if there's a sun or a Earth or whatever, or even a galaxy, it's centered by a point of stillness, which has a gravity shaft, which divides the male from the female. It creates the polarity of a north and a south, right? Everything in the universe conforms to this basic process. So gravity is stillness, and so is magnetism. Magnetism is cathode planes of stillness, which house the cube. They're the still zero curvature planes, which give form to the spherical and ring systems, which are tiny, tiny systems within the core of that cube. The cube is literally millions of times larger than, if you look at the sun, the cube of the sun would probably extend out to something like what academia calls 2 to 3 light years away, although there's no such thing as the travel of light. But in that distance is just for reference. It's to tell you how huge the cube that gives form to the sun and the solar system is in comparison to the tiny solar system that centers it. So that's the way that nature works. It's all controlled by the omnipresent still magnetic light, which can take two forms. It can take the forms of cathode planes of stillness and points and shafts of gravity, which center. So it's both centered by still magnetic light, which is the creator, and it's bounded by still magnetic light. And those cubes exist in infinite regress and infinite extension. So they're everywhere. They're throughout all the universe. They're omnipresent.
So, Robert, what about free energy? Are there any theoretical ideas about how a so-called free energy device could operate within this concept?
Absolutely. We were just blessed by a friend of ours in Finland. His name is Esa Ruo. He shared with us what's known as the Sejaka files. And you can find these online, I guess. It's quite expensive to buy the series. It's about $600 or something. But we got 92 pages of documents between Walter Russell and his wife and NORAD and Raytheon back in 1961. And they showed that Walter Russell was working with nature. He was trying to copy nature, which is biomimicry. He was showing how mankind, we wind our coils in cylinders. And so they're homogeneous. Nature winds her coils in cones, in vortices. So what Walter Russell was doing, he was creating twin opposing cones where you would basically put in, just for reference, like say eight degrees of heat into the first cone. That is multiplied to 64 degrees, then to 512, then to 4096 through the spiraling compression of the cone. As the electricity enters the cone, it moves faster and faster and faster and tighter and tighter rings, which creates resistance, which creates heat. Walter Russell in 1961 gave NORAD, I mean, they worked. We have all the correspondence showing that they basically produced a free energy machine, which would put, with a little bit of electricity, would be able to heat an enormous amount of water and drive a steam turbine, which would produce unlimited electricity. You know, which you could feed back into the loop and just put a small bit of electricity back in the loop. And meanwhile, you're sucking off massive amounts of electricity. So we have the evidence showing This has been kind of rumored for quite a while about this NORAD, this agreement with NORAD and the coils that he gave him. And now we actually have the physical evidence, the actual documents that show the process that they went through in order to create a free energy machine, which is given to NORAD and which has been hidden from public, you know, intentionally, because the NSA and the CIA, their goal is not to protect the people of this country. What it is to protect the interests of the elite. And they want to make sure that coal and gas and uranium and us being slaves to a system where we continue to pay the elite and the powers that be for energy when we don't have to pay them for anything. I mean, that's the whole point of my work, is to, it's not to recreate this stuff, it's to, the 100th monkey thing, is to get a million or a billion people out there to realize, look, this stuff is already, it exists. We don't have to build this stuff. The military industrial complex owns this stuff. What we need to do is demand the immediate release of this stuff to save this world. That's the one thing that's going to change this world, is free energy technology. It will reverse the pyramidal systems of control. It will put power back into the hands of the people. We can have point of use generators and turbines, so you don't have to pay an electrical bill. You don't have to keep pumping gas. You can have electric cars run on this principle, and there's no need to be fighting wars in other countries to murder people and steal their resources and their oil and what have you in order to keep this present stifling condition of slavery in place.
Does the document clarify if Walter Russell willingly gave this to NORAD?
Absolutely. He gave it to them just, you know, he was, I think he was a little bit naive. I think he really thought if he gave it to them, you know, they were going to give it to humanity. And they didn't, of course, you know, just like they didn't with Tesla's work. I mean, yeah. They did not want people getting free electricity beamed to their houses. You know, that wasn't part of their plan. They were too heavily invested in railroads, into processing centers, you know, for the gasoline and coal. I mean, they had already calculated the astronomical profits they were going to have through this system of slavery, which is based on explosion-based technologies, which works directly against nature, which works upon implosion. We're doing everything exactly the opposite of nature. And the only way to make this happen is to copy nature with biomimicry. If we start copying her principles, we'll be able to manifest the abundance that nature does. Like when you put one seed in the ground and you get 1,000 out, you know, when you plant something, that's the way nature works. Nature doesn't work by taking. Nature gives because nature is based upon love. And the true definition of love is giving, so giving may give again. It's this iteration feedback process that the creator is perpetually creating creation with by giving love so that love can give more love. And that's the way we have to live our lives.
Mm, yeah. So it ended up in the worst hands possible. I've seen so many kind of fall
Absolutely.
Into this trap. You know, you get a lot of these well-intended people. I mean, we've talked with some of them too. I mean, old hippies, really, that, you know, end up working for the military and give all their stuff away. I can't understand why.
Right. You're so right about that. I mean, it's crazy, you know.
So is it, so taking it from them and giving it to everyone else. And okay, so let's just ask that question. I usually do, and I always preface it by saying, I don't mean that they're in the good hands now. You know, as I said, I think they're in the worst hands possible. But nonetheless, there are, you know, there are people that are not well out there as well. And I mean, is there any potential danger in just providing the world with free energy and you know, endless amounts of it, if you will? Could be a bad scenario arising. People building, I don't know, weapons or mass destruction, what have you. I have no idea. Would it work? Do you think
that's? I can't see it all, but maybe you want to take that, Matt. I can't see it remotely.
Well, I don't think that could have been any worse than what we're in now. Right. Now, what we've developed now in terms of energy production is based on explosion, and nature doesn't use fire to lift her forests into the air. You know, she grows 300-foot tall redwoods and generates coolness as her forests rise, and that's what biomimicry means. It's you know, the whole side of the shell game, I think, with science is that they're teaching the Big Bang. We call it explodemia. It's a locked one-way street. And it completely disregards the uphill flow of electricity, which is achieved through the windings of the vortices. And a perfect example of one half of a vortice winding is a tornado. A tornado winds up the nebulous air above the top of its funnel, and it winds it down to an apex. And at that apex is where, at 90 degrees, all the energy that is wound up is released. And we see that energy blow houses away, decimate trailer parks for some reason all the time. But it's one of those things that stares us in the face. And we just, if we could, that's what Victor Schauberger tried to do. Was he worked for the Germans, and our Air Force pilots called those flying discs he built Foo Fighters. So he understood through the motions of nature and how the trout was able to hold itself still in the stream through the implosion method of its gills. And that's what we're missing. Science conspicuously is missing the twin to the buildup of matter itself, which is centropy, the uphill flow of electricity. And they explain greatly how the universe tears itself apart. But if that's all we have is an incomplete conception of nature tearing itself apart, then everything we build will tear itself apart, which it seems to.
Yeah.
And the dumbest thing I think we've done as a race is dig up uranium, purify it, and light it on fire, and then wonder how the hell are we going to put it out when it melts down beyond our control.
Yeah.
And we currently have, two reactors burning in the world that we know of, that we're told of. That's Chernobyl, which they built a massive dome, stadium-sized sarcophagus of concrete over, and no one's allowed to go near that for the next 57,000 years or so, or however long it takes to, for that reaction to reverse its potential. But now we also have Fukushima that is burning. And, we don't have any way to put these things out. And that's dangerous. And we should, to talk of building 50 more nuke reactors in the next 10 years is even more absurd. I mean, how do you deal with a psychopath? How do we deal with a group of psychopaths who wants to reap astronomical profits, put price tags on everything on the face of the earth, including us? How do we deal with them? We don't. We have to teach men and teach women to see the universe perhaps through the eyes of an illuminate. We have to show them that there's this uphill flow, that there's these vortices that create. And the rodent and the torus, this is an effect of the vortices, the jive movement, as we like to call it. It takes your mind away from the cause and focuses you on the effect. The toroid will never create free energy. It'll never create the heat needed to create free energy because it's missing the uphill flow. It's missing the spiral motions. And I think whether these guys are aware of it or not, they're not helping the situation to free the minds of children. If we just taught one class of 100 kids the uphill flow of electricity, the Russellian process mixed with Schauberger, mixed with some of the things Tesla knew, in so many months or years, we would have these kids theorizing the kind of thoughts that would build the implosion technologies. Instead, we lock them into a one-way street of entropy that will never build anything but explosion-based technologies. And that's what we're doing this. We never got together to do this because we desired money. We never got together to do this because we desired fame or a pat on the back from anyone in the New Age movement, who most of those people we don't even want anything to do with. We did this to try to help humanity out of a sense of love from the heart. I have two children. It's something I want to see a world for them, to have the benefit of living in a world that's not, that doesn't have a price tag on everything, that's not so controlled and Orwellian. I have imagined the big black boot stepping on the side of humanity's face for eternity, and I don't like that. I don't like that, kind of picture in my mind. So finding Robert and finding the resonance that I got from Walter Russell and the beauty of the seamless. When I look out at nature, I see this, the rings of trees, the rings of my own bones, and the spheres of my cells. These are rings and sphere systems. That's what we see populating the infinity of space. And so, I don't see strings. I don't see particles or quantum. And if that's even necessary to see those things, it's simply enough for me to know that the universe moves in such a sacred way. It's a spiral. It's a loop. It's beautiful, and it's sacred. And I mean, we take it, we tear it apart, and we make a mess out of it. And that's because we don't understand the fundamental principles of creation, which somebody like Walter Russell was able to see because he penetrated the veil of the senses. He was severed from his senses, and he became holy mind. And if anybody's ever experienced a flash in their mind, and we've had actually probably 30 to 40 people contact us over the past 2 years and say, because of your work of bringing Walter Russell and his illumination, it explains what happened to me. Even though my family called me nuts, there's a beautiful woman from the UK who wrote that her father won't even talk to her because she tried to communicate this experience to him, and he thought she was crazy. You know, it's time we put down these terms and actually listen to people and their experiences. Something's trying to communicate to us, and it's not Artemis from the Pleiades. It's the Creator, which is you as an extension of it. I mean, this is something, you know, we all can tap into, and that's our saviorship. When we all realize that we have the power within us, we can manifest a different world, and that will inspire hundreds, if not thousands, of other people to look for the answers within and the knowledge that comes from within the light of mind itself. So,
very good. Now, Victor Schauberger, as you said, was, you know, he was mimicking nature in his work, pretty much. He managed to show that nature is the greatest teacher, and at the same time, we're disconnected from nature. I mean, our young ones are kind of entering into, you know, kind of an illusion about what nature is. It's the Disney version of nature. To many people, nature is something that has to be combated, if you will. If we are left to our own devices as humans, we freeze to death. We can't survive a single day. You know, animals out there will eat us. We'll be consumed, if you will, by nature. It's almost like we're not fitting in, and so therefore, at the same time, we become disconnected from it. I mean, who knows what really happened or why we ended up in this situation? If we've just slowly kind of removed ourselves from it, or nonetheless, but if there is this other loving side to nature that is nurturing and giving. The question is, it's a switch that needs to take place in the mind foremost for us to be able to see this, for us to be able to, experience that. What do you think about that, Matt?
Well, that's correct. I mean, obviously there's things that have happened along the line. I would say that crawling into the cave of a sleeping bear is not a balanced act. And if you were to get eaten by the bear, it would be your own fault for not, having the sense to stay out of a bear's den. And it could have been an honest mistake as well. You know, sometimes, you know, when a bus goes off a cliff and it's full of children, there are many who say, well, that was God's will. Well, no, it wasn't. Perhaps it was the imbalance of the mechanic who failed to fix the front right wheel, which blew out and caused it to fall over. We think that God is in some sense vengeful because of the acts of nature. But perhaps planetary change and volcanic action, you know, building your town at the base of a volcano that's dormant and it blows up. Is that an angry God? Is that a wrathful nature? It certainly would look so to the people of that town or the surrounding towns. You know, just recently seeing the what happened in Haiti and other places. This is actually Earth expansion, I think, that is causing a lot of the effects that we see. But what man does, I think, is he puts the blame on God when he should actually more or less see it as a natural process. If man could understand, number one, that he doesn't die, that this is just an incarnation, it would make a much better world for this, in the sense that natural accidents that occur in nature would remove the sense of blaming any sort of entity for doing this to man or something like that. But it's basically, I think we need to age a little. Consciousness is growing up, and I think we're finally beginning to move out of the adolescent stage. But the adolescence in us, which is this elite, this sense of entitlement, I want to own the whole world kind of feeling and run the whole game, is beginning to wane in humanity. And I've had many friends say, well, there's maybe 1,000 people, and if we took them out, we could get our world back. Well, no, it's not the 1,000 people that are the problem. It's the 50 million that are taking their orders that
That's
are the
right.
problem.
Yep.
And so, you know, like nature, I think what nature, the reason animals act on instinct is you could, what Russell said was instinct is like God control, where God runs the show, the universal mind, and I should probably use the term creator so that it's not taken out of context, but the creator is the instinctual control of nature. And instinct does exactly what instinct is supposed to do. You don't see beavers building dams in trees like bird nests, you know, and no beaver goes to dam building school. They know this innately in themselves, and that's that all, that omniscient light of mind that is accessible by all creatures and runs everything on instinct. Mm-hmm. What nature has done is removed control from man. She's freed him from her grip. And I think that's purposeful.
Yeah.
And if I was a creator, I think I would choose one being to represent and express my nature on a planet. And my nature being omnipresent, I would do this on all systems and all planets. I would have a being that represents, you know, excuse the noise, you know, the best that humanity can be. And the artist is the one who in a sense is the person that comes to inspire. And if I may just quickly read one more quote by Russell. He writes, "It is true that I have challenged the accuracy or completeness of the Newtonian laws of gravitation, and I will just as vigorously attack the other sacred laws. I'm sorry that an artist had to do it, but Sir Oliver Lodge said that no scientist could make the supreme discovery of the one thing for which science is looking and hoping. He said that such a discovery would have to be the supreme inspiration of some poet, painter, philosopher, or saint." And I think it's the man with the imagination who can clearly see the purpose of his reason for being. And that's in accord with nature. The purposefulness of it, the flower, is not an accident. I think that you know, when man lives with a purpose, the effects of his imbalance will wane such. His fear of nature will conform to more of an abundant giving, mm-hmm. you know, to mimic nature instead of to fear it.
Yeah.
You know, there's always going to be accidents, Henrik. I mean, I don't think even in a brotherhood and sisterhood or utopia, there'll still be little kids that fall off of cliffs or.
Well you know, this is, sorry to interrupt, but exactly. That's my point of all of this,
right.
That we're disconnected from how things are naturally run. And I think what part of this delusion that we're entering into is because we have a fear of death, as you say, and also this, you know, we want to create security around us where there is no security and there isn't no need for that either, but we don't realize this because we're living in a fantasy world where we think that we can't be hurt or anything can't happen to us, but when it's the very accidents and challenges in nature that actually causes us to you know, to grow and to learn more, and we're trying to, you know, completely, you know, rid ourselves from this, which is an insane idea to do.
Yeah, that's beautifully put. And I think if more people realized that, you know, taking chances is part of living, it's as if the authorities have become so overprotective. And you know, I could tell a story from when I was a young man, 13 years old. I used to love jumping off the high dive at our local swimming pool. Well, they decided to remove the high dive because they couldn't afford the insurance. And then all these little kids behind me who I looked at, I just felt so sorry for them because they'd never be able to feel the thrill of what it was like to jump off. And this high dive was only 20 feet tall at the most. Mm. You know, the low dives were 4 feet. And, you know, I looked at that high dive missing and I thought to myself, well, all these kids are going to miss the thrill of what it was like to jump off that high dive, all because of an insurance company.
Yeah.
It's like we've removed the ability to live because of the fear of death. And so you see this cosmetic industry, you see, you know, get this boob job, get your face lifted. You know, does Saturn go to the doctor to get a facelift or remove her rings? If she did, we wouldn't even recognize it as being Saturn. You know, we have to love the fact that we get old. We have to grow old gracefully. I tell my beautiful woman, you know, not to even dye her hair anymore. And she hasn't in several years. I love her for who she is and who she's blossoming into. That's something Leo helped me realize, that, that women are beautiful in old age. Why would we want to mask that and hide it just to appear young to society?
Yeah.
I mean, we have it all backwards. Our fear of death is what drives this fear of nature, I think. And when we embrace the reality that we cannot die, that we are immortal, that we live eternally, we act for a motion of time, a moment of time. It's called 80 years, a human life. And then we cease from motion. All things in the universe follow this process. All bodies live for a time and then rest from action. And then they repeat. And that's what the idea is, you know, being in Russellian science, that ideas never exist. It's simply simulated in motion. But the idea itself is eternal. And that's what the white light of mind is in Russellian science, which all mystics have described as being that white light where they get that flash of knowing, that eureka moment, if you will.
Indeed. Now, death is the most central part of, I think, nature's process of how it continues to, you know, expand and grow. And that's what we have to, you know, come to terms with. I wanted to ask you the same, Robert, you know, what do you think about this whole problem of man's disconnection from nature and how, you know, those effects are, you know, visible in the world, if you will, if you have any comments on that?
Yeah, because we're basically working against nature. You know, we can't continue to, you know, explosion-based technologies are diametrically opposed to nature. Nature doesn't work that way. Nature works through implosion. So we have to copy nature. We have to be mindful of the way that nature works, and we have to basically create technologies that are based upon her motions, not these backwards, you know, motions that basically enrich a small group of people, you know, at everyone else's expense.
Now, before we wrap things up for this time, I want to, you know, get to some details again where people can find more about your work. And I just like to say that I'd love to do this with you both again soon. Actually, there's so much more to talk about, and it's, you know, it's we've just scraped the surface here, obviously, and there's just so much more to the story. I want to get both more from Russell's and Leo's perspective, and also both of you individually. So you guys can keep that in mind. But why don't we, if there's nothing else, I guess we can. I want to ask you if there's anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with. First, Matt, how about you? And as you do that as well, give us your websites and everything as well at the same time.
Certainly. Well, this is a stimulating discussion. I mean, these are the kinds of discussions that philosophers for centuries have had over cold ales in the, you know, in the comfort of their home in front of a fire or in different situations. These questions are what drive humanity. It's what drove me to begin my show, The Exploration of Consciousness, which resulted in our series of work with myself and Robert. And I have really felt that there's been no better person on the planet. That when I started my show, I asked three basic questions. Who am I? Why am I here? Who am I? Where am I from? And why am I here? Or where am I going? Basically, those questions that, sure, drive the philosophical mind. Upon reading Russell's work, I found many of the answers to be acceptable, you know, and Russell was just one of those people. Between him and Leo, and the power that they exemplified in their joint work as one unit of creation, male and female equal in that sense, they were able to deliver the words of inspiration that lifts the souls of even the least among us. So to me, it was obvious that finding the questions answered in that sense, my fear of death has been removed. My inability to produce the kind of life I want has been removed. My inability to find inspiration in the moment to be creative has been removed. All these obstacles that I felt I was facing are now just past memories. And the ride that I've enjoyed, and it's all been for free, it's all been a labor of love from the heart. I feel as if my soul bank is overflowing. And so my material life may not be what my ego has always wanted, which was that big, nice house. I still have to carry water and split wood. You know, that's something you have to do before enlightenment and after. So those don't change, but I just would fully recommend to anybody out there who's at that point where they want a better understanding of the world they live in, give the explanation of a divine illuminate a chance. Give it a chance, because everyone I know that has, we've gotten maybe 50 letters from people in 2 years that said, before I found Walter and Leo's work, I was an atheist. I'm not any longer, because I can truly understand what God is from a different perspective. That's not, it's not like a violation to us, you know.
Yeah.
So in a sense, that's the greatest thing, I think, is the ability to multiply the power of your own self, which the Russells called the self-multiplication principle. And when you do this, you can't help but give the abundance that overflows from the filling of the light in you. And this light is not a tangible light. It's just the light of mind knowing that you're part of the source. And then it's really a true definition of what oneness is. And you can't go wrong with it. And if there's anybody out there that knows a guy who did more than Walter Russell in one lifetime, send me an email, because I will check him out, absolutely, or her. So, and my website's mattpresti.com, and our joint website, thesecretoflight.com.
Very good. Thank you for coming on the program, Matt. We appreciate your time and your perspective. And I want to switch over to Robert here. Please give us your website again. And if there's anything else you'd like to, you know, leave our audience with some last thoughts here, Robert.
Okay, great. Yeah, it's Free Energy and Free Thinking. That's www.feandft.com. And 77G Slinger, as in Guitar Slinger, is the YouTube site where there's 666 videos which support Russ Ellian science from every different angle imaginable. So the last thing I would just say is that our ability to mentally image and to hold within our consciousness an idea of a better world is our greatest tool. They've called this daydreaming when we were, you know, being indoctrinated. We were being brainwashed in academia and classes, schools, Bible class, whatever. They want you to pay attention to what they're saying and not what is coming out of your own self-knowledge. And I would say that the greatest thing people can do is get in touch with the mental images and their own self-knowledge that they hold within themselves and manifest that, you know, visualize a better world for all of us and work with others of like mind, because we are the change. It's not going to come from listening to the news or the idiot box or, you know, the media from corporate-owned, you know, media and academia. It's going to come from us, the ones who basically tap into our very own source, which is the Creator. I mean, the source of all is the Creator, and all power and love and glory is due to the Creator.
Thank you. Thank you for your time today, Robert, as well. Great having you with us.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Well, I hope we can do this again, as you said. So we'll wrap things up for this time, and much more to come, I hope.
Thank you so much.
Many blessings.
Much love. So you live in hell. You have to wonder why it is that people always seem to suffer in the well beneath the water. By the answers to the questions that we ponder, do we try so hard just to falter? Sacrifices that we make upon the altar. If we learn to come together, then this world can change and we will make things better. Find yourself. Find the others. There's a world inside that you will soon uncover. Find yourself. Find the others. There's a world out there that wants to be discovered. When you find yourself. So you have no time, follow the leader. There's a goddess in you, I hope you get to meet her. Don't give your soul to no vampires. You need to learn to pull yourself out of the mire. It starts with you. You want a teacher, then stop believing. Follow your soul, the heart knows better. When you learn yourself, you will become the master.
find yourself.
That concludes our program. We have more coming up with Ian Crane. Next, after this, Kevin Barrett, Graham Hancock, Chris Thomas, and Dean Clifford will be joining us, to name a few. I'd like to extend my thanks to you for listening and for being a member. My special thanks to Fredrik, Lana, and Elizabeth for being part of Red Ice. Have a good rest of your day or evening. Take good care, and we will talk to you soon.